We had some hilarious times on the golf course, though.
Yeah, I imagine.
One time we were standing on the green, and an army helicopter flew over us, and we both like stopped and looked up, and we just felt like little kids. And Boss just goes, "Hi, Army man!" And we laughed for a fucking half an hour. I don't know if we're telling Voss stories or what, but it's tall but true. We're hanging out in the studio. Rogel is shooting pool, and we're going to be talking about whatever. That's right. Our guest is Greg Rogel.
Greg Rogel, that's right.
No, you could just say whatever. You keep shooting pool.
He's shooting pool.
What's your
over
credit?
There?
What credit should we use for you? Youngest comedian ever on the
Comedy
Tonight
Hour.
Show.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Not the youngest, but I was pretty young.
But back then, were you the youngest at the time?
I think one other guy might have been younger.
Who was it?
I think it might have been Alan.
Oh, my God! That's what I thought you were going to say. You got to be kidding me.
I think so.
Holy shit, dude. That's a world of shit right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know that guy?
No, I don't know that guy.
He's the guy who gave, say it on the air, I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah, maybe I should.
I don't know. All right, this is an interesting opening to Tall But True, you guys. We'll be right back to talk about who knows what with Greg Rogel right after this. So, we're back. It's Tall But True here with Greg Rogel.
Greg Rogel.
One of the youngest comedians ever to do the Tonight Show.
Yeah.
A guy's name came up. And then, like, all this shit was like, ah! Stuff that we're kind of feeling like we really don't want to talk about. So we're going to move around it. But that guy's name was...
The unnamed guy.
The unnamed guy. He...
We named him. We already named him.
We named him. That's true.
Oh, we did? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Alan Bursky was his name.
Okay.
He's a guy that Greg and I both sort of randomly know. I know him from he was at a showcase in L.A. that we were at.
Yeah.
Right?
A West Coast guy? He's a West Coast
guy? He's a West Coast guy, yeah. Anyway, there's some shady business along the line there.
Yeah, he's been around for years. He was just Freddie Prinze's roommate years ago.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Been in it for a minute. Okay. Yeah.
And then he became an agent at William Morris, so that's just creepy enough.
Right? Yeah,
that's all you need to say.
Yeah.
All
comic to agent. Right
that was funny. It was like, uh-oh, there's a scoop here.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, Voss, I still, to this day, have not played golf with Voss.
Rich Voss.
Since that day. And, you know, once every other year, he calls me up and goes, "Let's play." I'm like, "No." What are you doing? No. I think a year ago he actually, and that was like 8 years ago that I told him I wasn't golfing with him anymore. And
broke his heart.
Well, maybe, but like not completely. His heart was already broken.
Broken for 2 decades. Though.
Yeah.
Just like the rest of us.
Yeah.
He actually, I think he was, he thought I was going to go. I was like, dude, I'm not playing. Cause I could be angry enough on a golf course. I don't need somebody else who's.
You angry? Okay. I can't
irascible.
Believe it.
Oh, he almost, we played golf, me and you, and you scared the shit out of those two old men. We're,
what? He's menacing old men again? Jesus.
Yeah, I
did not frighten old men.
I hadn't been playing.
This is no country for old men.
I only played, it was like my third golf game.
Yeah.
And, so I'm going a little slow, you know, because I kind of suck at it. And I left my club at the previous hole. So I go back to retrieve it. And these two guys are like, "Hey, listen, we don't think it's you. But one of you guys is going really slow. And if you can pick up the pace a little bit, I'd appreciate that."
Uh-huh.
I'm like, "Well, it is me. I'm only like my third time ever playing golf. So you're going to have to keep your shirt on." So then I went back to the hole.
Like,
and 2 seconds later, the ball comes whizzing in, lands right in between me and Ben.
So that's an on-purpose thing.
Right.
For a non-golfer,
that's
the ball. So I pick up the ball and I toss it in the lake. And then the two guys start charging down the hill. And Ben turns around with his club. He goes, "I'm going to shove this club up both of your fucking asses." And they both turned around and ran back up in the other direction. Yeah.
That's the Bailey I know. The Bailey I know.
So me, that you know, then like 5 holes later, they're on a tee not that far from us, and I go up and I'm like, "Hey, I'm sorry, guys.
I didn't mean to. And they're just looking at me like, what? You're apologizing now?
He made nice.
They're like, yeah, you guys are good. Crazy in that group. Fighting and apologizing. That shit happens on a, when you're playing golf in the New York, New Jersey area.
Yes.
There's a lot of this. Four! And then, what the fuck? Hey! And then, you know, like, it's a weird place for it to happen, but
yeah,
you almost get in fights on a fucking golf course sometimes because a golf ball could kill you.
A golf ball could kill you.
Hit you in the head and fucking kill
it's
you.
It's dangerous. Really?
Yeah, oh, totally. DC is not a golfer.
I'm not a golfer. I worked as a waiter at a tennis and golf club. It was a club.
Oh, like a country club?
Country club.
Where,
It was in Kensington, Maryland.
And oh, I
was,
in Kensington.
Yeah,
oh.
It was very fancy.
Over at the club in Kensington.
And it was the whole, well, the club was restricted, so no Jews.
So there's a moose
no
on the
blacks.
Wall?
It's the moose store. Nobody, but the whole staff was like the fucking UN. You got the Turkish chef, you know, the Ecuadorian guys. There was one black dude at the golf course, at the club. He was, I don't remember what... He was sort of the waiter, the head waiter, but he did a lot of other shit. And
is it racist that I just pictured Isaac from The Love Boat?
When it was that? He looked a little like Isaac from The Love Boat, but with no balls.
I know the uniform a little, so I was like...
He looked a little like Isaac, and he was sweet, man. He was just a real nice guy, but it was like, you know, the people there, they had this pool in the summer,
right.
And we were, my friend and I, this Jamaican guy, we were the patio waiters, and you were not allowed in the pool. None of the staff was allowed in the pool. And, you know, you have people call you boy and shit all the time.
Oh,
for real.
Jesus.
It was just crazy. It was like crazy.
Whoa. That's the way it is in Kensington.
It was so fucking, it was crazy. But I remember there was this black guy, and he was older. He'd been there forever, right? He was like an old-looking Isaac. And he was always real polite to everybody there.
Right.
And the way they got around the whole thing about being restricted, they had one of each. So they had this Jewish guy, and this Jewish guy came in there.
Is this about how the company Benetton got started?
Oh, no, but it's like one club member each. That's right. How they got around it. This Jewish guy came in there, and he had the fucking shirt open with a giant Star of David. It just drove everybody crazy. Drove everybody crazy, man. He was,
that's awesome.
Oh, it's like Rodney Dangerfield and Caddyshack.
Yeah, it's Caddyshack.
Yeah, it was like that. That's great. Tipped fucking, he made a lot of noise. He'd always bring other Jews in there to fucking, he'd over tip to, you know, and he just, but there was this black guy and that guy, I mean, we got treated badly, got called, you know, boy, bring me my iced tea, and I went to Arnold Palmer, and the golf balls would be flying around, whatever. But this guy, I'll never forget, man, this has nothing to do with it, man, but once I went into the bathroom and I was taking a piss, and he came over next to me and he's mumbling himself like the stepfather. You ever see that movie where the guy goes and he's got another side to him? He's like, fucking, you know, fucking kill these motherfuckers, fucking kill these motherfuckers, right? So he comes into the bathroom, he's mumbling, he's like, kill this cracker motherfuckers, I fucking kill cracker ass cracker, gonna talk about what?
And he whips out his shit. He doesn't know you're in
he
there?
He knows I'm there, but I'm a staff guy, so he's so into it, he doesn't even care.
You're not even a person.
He doesn't even care. He's just got his eye line on the urinal. He's going to the urinal, right? And there's no, in the staff, there was no, in the staff bathroom, there was no separation. So I'm taking a piss. I'm listening to this guy, and it's really uncomfortable. And he whips his shit out, and it's like a foot long, right?
Whoa.
It's like, boom, right? And he's holding it away from the urinal, like midway, like a fucking baseball bat, pissing all over the place, too. He's pissing all over the place. He's like, motherfucking crackers. I killed these crackers.
Holy
and it was
shit,
just such.
Dude.
And then he went out, and you'd see him be like, yes. Oh, absolutely. That iced tea was not nice. Oh, absolutely. And it was just such a funny,
has to do that in the bathroom.
Oh, he would go in the bathroom
to
and
get
mumble.
Through it.
It was just these just psychotic mumblings. They go out, and he had been there so long. And they'd be like, Jim, I think his name was Jim. They'd be like, Jim, this iced tea is unacceptable. He's like, well, I'll just have to do something right about that. Go to bed, motherfucker. Well,
I'll just stir it with my six foot hog. Stick my huge cock in the back room. But
that's my
That'll
only
make
golf
it taste
story.
Better, won't it?
It was on
that's
the
your
of,
golf story.
shit.
Dude, it doesn't have to be golf. You're reminding me. When I was driving limos, I had a job where I was a corporate chauffeur, right?
Yeah.
So, like, we only drove the board of directors of the company.
Uh-huh.
So, and I was doing stand-up at the time. So I'd be out all hours of the night working, whatever. And then I had to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning. I would go in there, and I wouldn't have anyone to drive. So, like, our office just had lazy boys and a little TV, and we just were, like, on call. So I had to get there by 8, but then I could sit down in a lazy boy and go back to sleep for, like, 4 hours.
Sweet.
And then get up and go have lunch, and, like, it was a great gig. Drove the boss crazy that's what we did. But what made me think of it was I had a friend at that job who had a similar side.
Uh-huh.
Like, you sit and chat with him. It was great. He'd be like, oh, really? Oh, that's nice. Yeah. Mm. But then when it came out, he had this anger that came out.
Like, yeah.
Like, they shorted him on his paycheck. And he goes, that bitch in payroll shorted me. However much, he goes, I'm going to fucking blow her away. I'm like, dude, you can't kill people. Like, he was a Vietnam veteran.
Oh, shit.
And there were some guys that came back, you know, that were...
my uncle.
Were heavily affected by it. And he said he was a nice guy, but he had a little crazy streak in him and a crazy temper, you know.
Well, you around? Do you ever work Pips? You probably
Yeah, we Pips were just... Again. Yeah.
I go to Pips one night, and it's a brick building. You know?
Yeah.
And the angel, the busboy, sitting outside with a pack of matches... trying to light the building on fire. I'm like, what are you doing? He goes, I'm burning this fucking building down. That's what I'm fucking doing. I'm like, dude, get a lighter.
Oh, I love that.
Get a lighter. You're like, employee of the month again, eh?
Dude, that is hilarious.
Trying to burn this fucking building down.
One match at a time, just trying to light the building on fire.
Dude, when I was a kid... my friend and I, here's, you know, how stupid you are when you're 11 or whatever. I don't remember how old we were. I think we were in fourth or fifth grade. We're sitting on the roof of his garage way back down behind his parents' house. And it's a hot day. And he is flicking, you know, you could...
Matches.
You've discovered matches.
Yeah,
you shoot
them like little flaming.
Yeah, you flick them right off the hard box, and they go flying. He's doing that. He's flicking matches into a pile of leaves.
Yeah, that's not gonna happen.
Yeah,
at the which is down under us, and we're sitting on the roof of the garage. Of course, a fucking huge fire starts. His mom comes running from the house. Fear of God in her eyes with the hose, and she's yelling, turn it on, and my friend's older sister is turning on the water, but the hose is not connected. So, like, the whole, you know, the hose has that thing that it's rolled on that hangs on the wall. That entire thing is off the wall and in the driveway, and the hose is still wrapped around it. And the other girl, you know, oh, it's like,
the moral of the story is 11 people died.
Yeah, right.
Actually, the fire department came.
Ah, shit.
Got there very quickly. The kid's father, who the other kid in the story, his father was a fireman. The fire department comes, they put the fire out, they come over to the two of us, dummies sitting there on the curb, and they go, which one of you is whoever's kid? And he puts his hand up, and they're like, oh, oh, I wouldn't want to be you tonight, buddy. And he just was like,
dude, when I was a kid, I had this friend, and we discovered shoplifting, right? We thought we were really fucking good at it. So we started, like, going, you know, we'd steal, like, this little thing or that little thing. We're like, this shit is easy. We're really good at it. And neither of us had any money. So we decided there was this toy store. After, must have been about a month of just shoplifting little things, we're like, we're going to take down this fucking toy store. It was called Lowen's, and it was the toy store, right?
We're going to take them
down. So we planned it out,
we're
going to
clean them out.
Oh, we were like, we're going in the loans. We're getting fucking G.I. Joes. Uh-huh. We're getting...
we got to put that in airplane mode.
We're getting, like, cap guns, whatever, you know, like 70s toys were back then. So we brought backpacks. We rode our bikes there. We brought backpacks. We put some school books in them.
Right. Just props.
Just props, right. We walk around, and this is how bold we were. I can't believe we fucking did this shit. We not only did we steal, we opened packages, took the shit out, put it in our backpack, hung out for a while, stole all the shit. Then we went to the counter, and we're like, you know what? We're just going to leave our backpacks up here so we can look around just so you know we're not stealing anything, right? And the lady's like, okay, right? Whatever, you know? So we go around and steal some more shit. We're stuffing our pockets, right? We're stuffing our pockets with shit. It's horrible. It's horrible. We just discovered. We're like, this is the greatest shit ever.
Oh, you're a kid, man.
You get stuff for free, you know? How did we not know about this? So I'll never forget. We were opening some G.I. Joe. It was like this G.I. Joe, and he had this kung fu grip. And
G.I. Joe, the kung fu grip.
You pull a string in the back, and it'll be like action stations or whatever. And he had this like little hand helicopter thing that he would fly around it. So opening that up.
I remember that thing.
Yeah, it was like this
little fold
out helicopter thing he would fly around with. So I'm opening that. The guy Andrew's opening it. He's sticking it in his pocket. And I, out of the corner of my eye, I see this head pop around the corner. And I was like, I think I saw a head. And then all of a sudden, there's fucking. Hand grabs my arm and his arm. It was like the grip of death, right? It was the strongest hand I've ever felt. And his voice goes, okay, boys, let's go, right? We're like, oh, shit. So this guy's dragging us to the back office. So we're shedding toys on the way. We're like chucking toys. We're leaving a trail like breadcrumbs of fucking shit we stole. He takes us in the back office. He's like, all right, what's in the backpack? So we're like, nothing's in the backpacks. I've got my math book, my science book. He's like, and you got a G.I. Joe with kung fu grip, and it looks like a cap gun. How'd that get in there? Fucking thieves or whatever. Called our parents. Oh, dude, he called our parents, and it was Andrew's dad was in the Navy and was like a real, like, drinker and, like, corporal punishment advocate, as was my dad, not in the Navy part, but the ass whooping part. My dad, they had no car. He had to ride his bike to the fucking toy store. He had to write a check for all the stolen shit. And then he's like, you guys follow me home and you're not allowed to play together ever again. And we were like buddies, right? So we're following him home on our bikes and we're like, we should fucking run away because we know we're both going to get ass whippings. We're like, we should duck down this alley and run away. Because we didn't want that ass whip. But we almost ran away. We were like, almost, we should go down there. We didn't. I got home. He went home, and I know he got, he got ass. My dad beat my ass with a belt so badly. I had, like, stripes, like tiger stripes on my fucking legs. He beat my, and then my mom, in her, just to fucking, you know, up the ante, was like, you got to memorize Shakespeare. So she gives me I don't remember, it was some speech, Laertes, some fucking speech that I had to memorize.
Wow.
But what I did, I took such an ass whip and I was like, Mom, I'm kind of shy reading it. Could I do it behind
Holy
this screen?
Contrast in parenting styles.
So I just wrote it on note cards. I did cheat sheets behind the screen. She's like, you're not reading it off. And I'm like, no, I'm shy. I can't.
No.
And I saw that kid once after that, and I was like a week after, and he was like, man, I couldn't walk for days because I got the ass whooping. But I never shoplifted again after that.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah.
I think
Holy
the statute
shit,
of
dude.
Limitations probably ran out on this, so I can tell you this story. My shoplifting story was 12 years old. It was like 12 years old. We went to this place. I won't say the name of it because I don't know if they're still in business, but they sold classic baseball cards.
Right.
So we started lifting all these old black and white baseball cards because we didn't know. So we got 50 of them, and then we snuck out of there and we went back to his friend to his house, and his father had a book, collector's book that shows you the prices of these cards, and we ended up stealing. I think this is back in the 80s. It was over $17,000 worth of baseball cards. And we panicked.
God.
We panicked because we realized we just committed grand larceny this year. We're not just so we did what any logical 12-year-old kid would do, and we threw them all down the sewer.
Oh my God, dude.
Yeah, that's my shoplifting story.
When I was a kid, this is revealing, kind of revealing, I guess. When my teeth came in, I was taking medication, and my teeth were yellow.
Tetracycline?
No, not tetracycline, but penicillin.
Oh, right.
Did the same kind of thing as tetracycline did to people earlier, 15 years earlier, or something like that, I don't know. whatever it was, my teeth were yellow, and it sucked. Everybody made fun of me for having yellow teeth.
You look like a smoker in your fucking hole.
Look like a smoker. Yeah. I'm in seventh grade.
Yeah.
And so Topol, the smoker's tooth
polish. I remember Topol.
Came out, and it was like, are your teeth tired of those ugly yellow stains? You know? And I was like a little kid watching and just like, oh my God, maybe this Topol smoker's tooth polish will fix it for me, but I couldn't buy it. So I try to steal it. And I switched a price tag. I only had a dollar. I think I had a fucking dollar. And so, stupid plan, I switched a price tag on the Topol. It was like $9, and I made it like 98 cents. I took a price tag off of something else in the store and put it on, over the one on the tooth polish, and I got busted. The guy in the store, there's a security guy in the store. He's like, he goes, when you pulled your friend aside and said, I know what we can do. That's when I knew you were up to something.
When I saw that evil yellow grin on your face.
Evil yellow grin.
As soon as I saw your teeth.
The yellow menace. Yeah. Oh, that's great, dude. That is great.
Well, so then I was like, it wasn't like police trouble, but it was the store called, you know, he's like, who? I'm going to call your house and tell your parents about this. And I was like, not if I don't tell you the phone number. You know? So I can't remember what I did, but somehow I got him to call my buddy's older brother, who was over 18, instead of calling my parents. And so he called my buddy's house, asked for his older brother. His older brother was like, okay, sure. And then went right and told his mom, who told my mom. And then just like,
shit.
I saw him later. He's like, I'm sorry, man. I'm really sorry about that, dude. I'm like, well, it's okay.
It's Topol.
I kind of put you in a bad spot. It's Topol. Needless to say, I was very happy when tooth whitening came along. And I was able to whiten my teeth.
Oh, the blast from the past Topol, man. Shit.
Topol, the smoker's tooth polish.
I remember that shit.
Pretty weird being that age and going, I need some of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why they should cut you slack. If you're stealing Topol, clearly you have some sort of medical condition that you need to deal with.
Yeah, totally. I feel like as far as stealing stuff goes, it's not that bad because I really was like, I couldn't buy it. You had to be 18
to buy it.
And I really wanted to fix my fucking yellow teeth. But there's a point in kids... like adolescence, where kids figure out shoplifting, as you said. And they're like, you could just...
It's an epiphany for a minute.
Like, and anybody who wants to say, you know what, not me, I was always... Bullshit, there's a fucking study done. They tested little kids, they put them in a room, and they put a fucking cupcake in front of them. And they said it's against the rules to touch the cupcake or eat the cupcake.
Oh, as an adult, I'm all over that cupcake.
Yeah. If you eat the cupcake, I won't give you any more cupcakes. If you don't eat it, I'll give you as many more as you want. The whole thing. And then you leave the kid with the cupcake. 100% of the kids
took the cupcake.
Took the fucking cupcake. So my point is, you can't feel badly about it. It's something you have to learn. Steal shit.
Right.
So, and there's a point where kids are like, I'm going to take the cupcake.
I knew it was wrong. You know it's wrong.
Your
parents tell you it's wrong, but it's like...
go for it.
You know, it will be the first time I did some shit I knew was wrong. Mm. It's like that... What's that scene in a Once Upon a Time in America? And there's this kid, and it's on the Lower East Side, and there's this girl that's in the neighborhood. He's a virgin, and all the boys are lining up because she'll fuck them. But you got to bring her a pastry. She loves this particular kind of pastry. So he's in the hallway.
Oh my God, he's got
the pastry. He's waiting his turn, and he's looking at that fucking pastry because he's so young. So it's like the pussy or the pastry. And finally, she opens the door, and he's got all the fucking cream all over his face.
But eventually, he stabs a cop.
Right.
So, you know.
That's true.
So he went a little too far. It moved beyond cupcakes.
Don't eat the cupcake.
Yeah.
Don't stab cops.
Shoot, man.
Wow. But so I went through the same time period. I remember our kids were like, we can steal shit.
Yeah.
And we had a little toy store in our town. And it was run by the only Indian man that lived in the town. And the poor guy.
Oh, poor guy. He must have gotten it.
Oh, man. He needed a full-time guard on that store because kids just were walking out of there with shit constantly. And he's struggling, you know. He's trying to make it in this town. But there was always the kids who went overboard, too. Like, some kids would be like, oh, I'm going to get out. I took a pack of gum or whatever. And there's the kid who, like, put a skateboard under his jacket and walked out. Like, literally had an overcoat and pulled a full-size skateboard off the wall and just put it under his coat and walked out the fucking door.
You know, I had a little stealing problem when I was a kid. I used to, in first grade, I used to rip off the kids. I used to steal their shit all the time. And then I would keep telling my mother I found it in the sandbox. Like, I'd come home with new stuff and be like, oh, I found this in the sandbox. And after like, it's the seventh sandbox story, it's like,
either
you're full of shit or you found a really cool fucking sandbox.
You're like, I put it in the sandbox.
When I was a kid.
But then I found it there later.
I stashed it in the sandbox.
What sort of stuff? Like, what?
Oh, as a kid, I remember one kid, he had like a little fire truck. I took his fire truck. Another kid had little dinosaurs. I stole his little dinosaurs.
You bastard.
I
stole a little boy's dinosaurs.
I stole a lot of shit as a kid. Yeah.
But you were a kid. You were a kid too.
It was first grade, I had issues.
We had these pens. I started this trend in my school. There were these U.S. government pens. Do you remember those? They were black. They said U.S. government on ballpoint pens.
Nope.
And they had a push button. It was probably a D.C. thing because it was, the government.
Oh,
so
yeah,
everybody
yeah.
in school. This was like, I think, second, third grade.
That's why they call them D.C. Benny.
Right. Well.
It stands for District of Columbia.
Columbia's his middle name.
My middle name is Columbia.
That's so perfect for you. All right, sorry.
Wait, this is quick.
So the pens.
The thing is, if you took the pen apart, the top half where the button was, there were these two things that looked like rockets. Like little rockets. It was a little one and then a longer one, which was the actual button.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
If you took the spring.
The insides of the pen, yeah.
The button part. If you took the spring from the ink side,
wedged it
in between, you had and then jammed it, you had like a little gun. You could shoot the rockets.
Yeah.
But now here's the thing. So that was one thing that some kid discovered was shooting the rockets. But then, and you could boom, somebody shoot someone in the face and but the thing was, the rockets came in different colors. So I started collecting the rockets. 99% of them were white. But there were there was a clear one, that was the best one. If you could get the clear one, or there was a green one or a blue one, so they would come in these colors. So
right.
I had this thing going in school where kids would steal the pens and look for the rockets. There was this rocket craze, and I had this collection of rockets. And it was me and this guy, John Coffey. He used to collect rockets. We'd steal each
John
other's
Coffey.
Rockets. Yeah, that was his name, John Coffey.
The giant from the Green Mile?
Same name.
Like
same
drink,
name.
But not spelled the same.
The empath.
So
the rocket craze got so bad, they outlawed those pens from the school they had. And it was so funny. I remember being as a kid, the teacher was like, okay, there's an epidemic of this rockets thing, and there's going to be no more rockets, no more government pens, only pencils or whatever. And I had started this whole thing of collecting those rockets, and these kids were going crazy, stealing them from each other. You know, it was like you would – to get the colored ones was such a big deal, man.
Dude, I think we had a similar thing with those little fluff balls.
Fluff balls.
We called them warm fuzzies. We had a thing when I was in elementary school, we had a thing where you could – You get coupons for doing stuff right. So if you had your homework, you get a half a coupon, whatever. And then you could use the coupons to buy stuff from like a little arts and crafts thing. And so kids would buy these little warm, fuzzy things. And it turned into this, what had to be similar thing. And everybody wanted them.
And they steal them.
And people were hoarding them and selling them. And like it turned into this whole fucking thing. And then the whole thing got shut down.
It's like cabbage pasta or some shit. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like human nature. So there's a young businessman in there somewhere.
Dude, not to be abrupt on this, but Roquel, didn't you like tour in Saudi Arabia or some shit like that? It has nothing to do with it. But, like, didn't you? Yeah. I just remember you telling me.
That was quite the segue.
Yeah, that's how I do it. That's how I do it.
Speaking of little fuzzy things.
Speaking of little fuzzy things, we could talk more about, you know, stuff that happened when we were in school, too.
Yeah.
You know, I thought of a whole bunch of stuff that when you were just saying that. Do you have, what are your memories of grade school besides stealing fire trucks and dinosaurs? Yeah.
Were you the class clown? You were the class clown, weren't you?
I was not the class clown, and I was fucking angry about it.
Are we off of Saudi Arabia now?
I don't know.
Let's just let it flow.
He just had this great story. That's why I threw it in there. But, you know, we're going good. It's going good.
We're going good, and guys can always come back.
Yeah.
Talk about whatever. So when you were in grade school in Saudi Arabia,
I did Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Kuwait, Oman, as a Jew, it was kind of an interesting. Oh, because all the Jews told me I was going to get
Irish. Yeah.
They would tell me I was going to get killed.
Yeah,
and it wears on you after a while. And like the first Muslim country I did was Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. And I didn't know it was a Muslim country. I was working in Singapore the night before.
Opening
for Russell Peters. Russell Peters, you know, was opening for him on his
tour.
Russell
Peters!
Yeah.
He goes on stage. Two guys wandering around yelling his name.
What was that?
He has like hype guys wandering around going, Russell Peters!
No.
He did at the festivals.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's not very Canadian.
But he goes on stage after I walked up in Singapore, and he goes, "How about I have for Greg Rogel?" He goes, "I'm bringing Jews to Singapore. I want to get them prepared for Malaysia tomorrow." And the whole crowd went, "Ooh!" And I'm backstage. I'm like, "Why are they ooing?" And one of the guys next to me goes, "Well, it's a Muslim country." And I'm like, "Oh shit!" So I didn't really have time to prepare. But I was like, "Ah, whatever. He's not going to bring me to a dangerous place." And then the next day, we're in Malaysia, and we're having dinner with one of the promoters. And I go to the promoter. I go, "Listen, is there any language restrictions or anything?" And he goes, "No, say what you want." I'm like, "Good, all right," because I mean, I'll talk about being Jewish. He goes, "No, you don't want to do that." He goes, "You know, they don't recognize Israel here. It's a bad idea." And then Russell's brother is a tour manager. I love Clayton. He's a great guy. Clayton just kind of gets angry at the guy. And he's like, "Hey, don't tell Greg what to do. He's going to kill Greg. You just go up there and you be you." I'm like, "All right." So then later that night, I go down to the lobby and the other promoter's down there. And I go, "It's okay to say whatever I want on stage." He's like, "Yeah, not at all." I go, "Good," because the other guy was giving me kind of an issue about telling him I'm Jewish. And he goes, no. And he starts doing it too, you know? So then I text Russell's brother. I'm like, "Yo, this guy is like almost having a heart attack telling me don't tell him I'm Jewish." And he doesn't respond till the next day. He goes, "I called that guy. I ripped him a new asshole. I told him, you don't tell Rogel what to do. You do." And I'm like, you know, I don't think he's trying to boss me around. I think maybe he's concerned for my welfare, you know? And he goes, you be you. I'm like, all right. And I kind of trust him, you know? So it's a huge shows. There's two shows. It's 9,000 people at each show. I went up there and I'm just killing it. So I just said, I'll throw it out there. You know what I mean? And I threw
just
it out
to
there.
See what happens.
And there was no issue at all.
Really?
At all. No. In fact, we went out to a club after the show. First of all, you know, I was outside meeting with all the people, taking pictures with them. Nobody said a word. Nobody cared. I went to a club. I got laid that night.
Beautiful.
It was great. Everything was great. And then
that's when you're being embraced.
So then
it'd be funny after you get laid.
Yeah.
Well, you know what happened.
Tell her that you're a Jew.
No, Shalom.
Well, that was the weird thing was she wanted to go smoke a cigarette at like 3 a.m. You can't smoke in the room. So I'm like, well, we got to go out front. So she just puts on my T-shirt and she's buck fucking naked. And we go outside and she's drunk and she's making a lot of noise. And every time the fucking breeze would hit her, her ass would fucking pop out. Nice. And I'm like, this is where I'm going to get killed right here.
Right. You know? And, defiling.
This is the end.
Yeah. But no issues at all. It ended up to be a great experience. So then, you know, he's like, "You ready for the Middle East?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'll do the Middle East." So our first shows were in Kuwait City, and I was a little nervous. Like we told everybody before coming and the promoters in all these countries that I'm Jewish. And the only issue we had was the promoter from Jordan said I can't go on because there's going to be a lot of Palestinians in the audience, and he was concerned for his own welfare. And Russell's brother, I gave this guy a hard time, but he's adamant about it. He goes, "We're going to bring you to Jordan. You're going to go sightseeing. You'll hang out the show, but we got to fly somebody else in to do it because he won't let you go on stage." So I'm like, all right, whatever. I'll let that go.
They were like, "Don't you tell Rogel."
Well, I'll get to that.
And he was like, "No,
because I did go.
I
on.
Must insist." Because
I ended up going on anyway. Because all the shows went great. Like, first we did Kuwait, and the audience was great. And I worked clean.
Now, who's
relatively?
Who's making up the audience here? Like,
these are the local people. The Kuwait show is about 3,000 people.
It's not expats. It's,
there's some expats mixed in, but it's mostly it's people who live there. You know. Yeah. And they were great. They were great. And I kind of worked clean because I didn't want to offend. Because they said you could use colorful language, but they were kind of being very vague.
They meant you could say colors,
what,
red, blue.
Right.
Hang yourself.
Point out that the sky is blue.
And you can't
sometimes.
talk about God or anything. Yeah. And he told me, he goes, be judicious. I'm like, you're using the wrong word there. Maybe I should be non-judicious. You know.
That's hilarious.
Gentile-licious.
What a slip. What a wrong.
But
Freudian.
The first show, I didn't
Wait, let me ask you before. How are the crowds in general? Like, are they...
Kuwait, all the shows...
Are they with you?
Yes.
Do they get all your little references?
Yes.
And do they... I thought they might be. That's great.
I mean,
really cool.
I tailored it to where my material... I wasn't doing, like, very local references from New York. Yeah. You know what I mean? So
pigeons,
I was giving them...
Pigeons suck, huh?
I was giving them stuff Muhammad. that they would understand. And they were great. They were great. And then
awesome.
After the first show in Kuwait, I was very comfortable. Then we went to Dubai... And I did the first show. Dubai's more like Vegas, you know. It's more Americanized, and it went great. So then I decided, you know what, next show I'm gonna go raw. I'm gonna do this. And they were like, yeah, do it. So I went up there and I just went, you know, fucking raw, you know, cursing, talking to my balls, and I killed it. And then I walked off. And Russell's brother fist bumps me. He's like, great job. And then I checked Twitter. And somebody posted at Greg Rogel in capital letters, no. So I'm like, all right, maybe I went a little too raw. So I go backstage.
Who posted
somebody
it?
Just in the audience posted. No. No. So then I go backstage, and there are these guys walking around with little earpieces.
Right.
And because they have morality police. In these countries,
of course.
So I went to Russell's brother. I said, "Is
that sounds like a reasonable idea?"
I go, "Who are these guys?" He goes, "Yeah, they're the police. They're making me a little nervous." I'm like, "Oh shit, did I do something wrong?" He's like, "No, I think they probably just want to take pictures of Russell, but I'm really not sure." I'm like, "Oh great, you know." So
Jesus.
So I was a little nervous. Then Russell went on, and he purposely went raw, and then he walked off, and he goes, "I did that for you." And then so I'm kind of hiding, and at this point, I don't talk about being a Jew on stage because you can't talk about religion, you can't mention God, it's just, you can't do it.
Right.
So I wasn't really comfortable revealing that I was a Jew at the time. This prince comes backstage. I mean, like one of the big ones too. His picture when you drive in, is his face on a giant wall. I mean, this is, you know, and he's got his protocol, which is the MAC introductions.
Like, his face on the money.
Yes.
I knew you had money. I didn't know you had money.
Yes. You say that as a joke, but he may very well have his face on the money.
Yeah. It's like coming to America.
Yeah.
His protocol, as the guy makes the introductions, I'm kind of hiding in the corner because I still don't know if I offended anybody yet. And he sees me and he makes like a beeline for me. And he leans in and he starts going, machashle, machashle, speaking to me in what I think is Hebrew.
Yeah.
But I don't speak Hebrew. So I go, I don't know what you're saying to me. And he goes, ugh. Baruch atah Adonai. So I'm like, is this guy feeling me out to find out if I'm Jewish? You know? So I go, buddy, am I Jewish? I go, you Jewish? And he goes, no. He goes, have you been to Tel Aviv? And like, if you have an Israeli passport, you can't be in the country. So I'm like, no. I go, what's going on? He goes, I'm just trying to welcome you in your own language. I'm like, I thought you were trying to kill me. Don't approach me like that. He's like, no, I want to take a picture. I'm like, oh, all right, let's take a fucking picture. You know? And they were great. So I was ready for Saudi.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Saudi is, Saudi it was different because it's a very strict country.
Yeah.
You know? So they had, it was about 5,000 people in the audience, women on one side, men on the other side, and they're separated by a giant sheet. And the show's being held out in the middle of the desert, about 90 kilometers outside of Riyadh, to avoid morality police.
Wow.
They don't know how I'm going to go over.
Dude, this is like a short film.
That's what I had to get this on.
That's amazing.
So they don't
know. I'm glad you went straight to it. Enough about this grade school shit. Yeah, we lit a fire. We stole some candy. Rogel, fucking okay.
The shit.
Sheet. It's like,
yeah, they're separated. Yeah. The local promoter here is she's a Palestinian woman, and she's very reserved. She wore the burqa, but it wasn't her face, wasn't fully covered. But she didn't want anyone taking pictures with her. It was very, you know, she's a religious woman. They didn't know how I would go over because I'm this guy from New York. And again, I didn't announce I was a Jew, but they all knew, the guys who brought me in knew I was a Jew.
He looked kind of...
So they decided to put a local...
You guys
local...
could look at a picture of Rogel online and...
Well, yeah. Apparently they did know, and I'll get to that in a minute. The audience knows.
I wouldn't look at you and go, he's Jewish.
No, because after the show, somebody comes up to me and he goes, you were very funny. You know who you remind me of? And in my head, I'm going, don't say Seinfeld. Don't say Seinfeld. he goes, Jenny Seinfeld. Like, All right. It's, you know, they know.
All right. So you're in a church.
So no.
Sitting.
We're in a desert in a giant tent with 5,000 people.
A giant tent with a sheet down the middle.
With a sheet down the middle separating the men and the women.
90 miles from town to avoid the morality police.
Correct. So
that's great.
They decide to put a local sortie guy who I guess is their comedian, I don't know, to go on before me to do like a 10-minute warm-up because they didn't know how I was going to go over.
A local opener.
So, you can't reference God. You can't talk about God. It's, you know, it's serious. You can't do that.
Yeah.
So he walks on stage and he's nervous as shit. He goes, oh, God, this is the biggest crowd I've ever seen. And it got really, really quiet. Right? And then he stood there for like 30 seconds and he went, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. And they're screaming backstage, get him off! Get him off the stage! So the DJ puts the music on.
Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God.
Yeah. So the DJ puts the music on, like, to get him off, you know? And the promoter comes back to me. She goes, I'm so sorry. I go, hey, you don't have to apologize to me. They're going to love me compared to the God guy. You know? And I went up there, and they were... fucking an amazing audience. And every time I would do something that's a little bit offensive, if I reference my balls, I would just look at the women and then all the men would howl. Like I would just pause and look at the women and then the women would laugh once the men laughed. And and they were great.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
What a crazy environment to be doing a show in there.
And then after the show, and then when I walked off, the this reserved promoter, this woman, she kind of looked around and made sure nobody was looking. And then she opened up her arms. She's like, ah! She gave me a big fucking hug, and then she ran outside, and she goes, we did it!
Oh, that's awesome.
Awesome, man.
And then
that
we went back,
fucking awesome.
And
dude.
Then we went to the Prince's Royal Palace, and they had a big feast for us, and they gave us gifts, and they had entertainment.
What sort of gifts?
I got these beads that they give you, I think Russell got a Rolex. they love him out there, you know. And they were great. And we were only going to stay for one day, but we decided to stay for 3 days because we were having such a good time. Sweet. And then the next day, the prince's his assistant. Said he invited a couple of us to go camping in the desert, in the Saudi desert.
Did they have the falcons?
I'm like, they do have the falcons out there. I didn't see any falcons. Uh-huh. And I was like a little leery about going camping in the desert.
Yeah.
You know? But he goes, well, why don't you come with me? He goes, I'll take you out to the desert. I'll show you. And so we're like,
I'll show you a hole in the ground. You got to go all the way to the bottom. Customized for Jew.
it's in that door over there.
Yeah, I got a nice dress for you. Out in the desert, Karen. Holy shit.
So dude, he took us out to the desert, me and like four of the other guys.
You went?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's got like his campgrounds. This guy's like he's the prince's assistant. This guy's a multimillionaire. Huh. Each tent is the size of your house. And one is the living room. One is the dining room. One is the sleeping quarters. They had ATVs, so we rode ATVs on the sand dunes. Told him I wanted to pet a camel. So he took me out to the middle of the desert, and there was a guy herding camels, and I pet camels. And they were absolutely, they were great, and they treated me really well. I got a 5-year multiple entry visa to go back for 6 months. I could buy a summer home in Saudi Arabia if I wanted to.
Holy shit,
so,
dude.
They were great. They were great.
Didn't you say there was a dog or something? There was like you took some pictures. There was something with a dog. I don't remember.
Oh, that's when you...
That might have been India.
In India,
you know,
this motherfucker. Maybe that was India.
We're in a truck stop in India,
unreal, right?
And these guys are eating. They're like, oh, they have like these little pastries with meat in it, in this little shitty truck stop in India. And they're all like, oh, we're hungry. Let's eat. I'm like, you're gonna eat these fucking things because you know in India you can get really sick. So I bought one and I ripped off a piece and there was a stray dog outside and I put it in front of the dog and he wouldn't fucking eat it. So I'm sitting outside. They're like, did you eat the pastry? I'm like, I'm not eating that fucking pastry. That dog isn't even.
And that thing is fucking starving, and it is not going anywhere near that pastry.
It's a famished dog. It's like, I ain't fucking eating that.
But how fucking amazing is that, Bailey?
Unbelievable. You know, unreal, dude.
So then our next shows were in Oman and Jordan. So when we get to Jordan, and by the way, in Jordan, I went to the Syrian border and went to the Zaatari refugee camp where all the refugees were. Mm-hmm. Me, Russell, two other guys. And we spent the day with the refugees, which is really, really so kind great. These are some really resilient people. Yeah. And they were great. I mean,
what did you guys do with them?
We walked around the camps. They showed us around. And then we spoke to the ones that do speak English. And they talked about their plight. And people think that they won't want to come to America. But they know. They want to go home. They want to go to Syria.
Yeah.
But they can't. They can't. It was actually pretty heartbreaking. And they showed us all of their artwork that they made, and like the kids made all these pictures, and they were like pictures of a kid playing with bombs dropping on them. I mean, it's really some heart-wrenching stuff. And they were all, you know, I felt, you know, you feel really bad for them. And I think if you actually went and saw them, you'd have a different opinion on immigration, you know. So
right, they're just people.
They're just people. Yeah. And they come from, you know, some of them are doctors, some are lawyers, you know, shopkeepers. They come from all walks of life, and they've just been displaced. And now they're living in basically almost an internment camp. Mm. And they've been living there for years. I mean, they're going on like 6 years. Jesus. Living in this camp. 80,000 people, you know, stacked into this small little space, literally living in tents, you know. And these are people that had middle class living, and you know. And so if you saw the level of the suffering that they've gone through, you'd have a different opinion of them. You know, you wouldn't, you know, for Trump to demonize them.
The problem is for people to see other people that are halfway around the world in a totally different environment as people.
Yeah. Right.
As actual people.
Right.
Especially when all you see is people on the news, like, you know, blow up America. Right. Blow up America. That's all you see.
Right. So, none of them, you know.
You know what he reminded me of when the guys were like, we'll take you out to the desert? Remember when we... DC and I were in Holland together. Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when we first went into the, is it the Comedy Cafe?
Yeah.
It's called?
The Rotterdam.
Yeah.
In Amsterdam was the Comedy Club. It was the Comedy Cafe.
Yeah.
On the Max Uweplein. I lived there for like a month, yeah. So I didn't know how to figure out where I was going. But so we go in there, we go into the club. And we meet the staff at the club.
Right.
You remember this?
Yeah.
And this dude comes over and he's like, oh, this young guy, oh, is it your first time in Amsterdam, in Holland? And we're like, yeah. And he's like, it's great. It's nice. I could take you on a tour in my boat. And we're like,
oh yeah, I remember that.
We're like, oh yeah, where's your boat? He's like, I'll show you. And we walk around behind the place, and he points this little fucking boat.
A dinghy.
It's got a little boat with a. It's got a motor on it, but it's just
it's
a little
the saddest
boat.
Looking thing. It's like a fucking dish plate in the water with a motor. Yeah,
and, yeah. And he wants plate. The three of us to go out. Two big dudes, and he wasn't a small guy either. Yeah. We're like the three of us in that boat. He's like, oh, I'll take you out to the main harbor. And we're like, I don't think we're coming back from that boat ride, dude. That thing's going to go under. We're like, no thanks.
Yeah. And he kept asking about it. You sure you don't want to go in the boat?
Yeah. Yeah, he was like offended. He was like putting it on us like, it's offensive to me that you won't
really
get in my
rickety.
Boat. And there were those two English comics who were, we slowly figured out were a couple.
Oh, yeah.
Two dudes.
Oh, yeah.
They're looking at us. They're like, so what are you guys doing later, you know?
Yeah, that was another
And they
thing.
Just looked at us a little too long.
Yeah.
And we're like, they're staring at us.
You've got some hash and anus.
They're like,
some porridge for your anus.
Are you guys a couple, too? Because this could be a lot of fun. That's
you know,
the
that
closest.
Was funny. In Saudi Arabia, the at the palace, and a guy comes over who's like one of the prince's assistants to show me how to order the Arabic coffee properly. There are different hand gestures, and the guy's he's going, so what you want to do is, you know, you want to wave your hand like this if you want this. And as he's saying, I'm like, you know, you're clearly gay. How do they not execute you?
How do you survive the stoning?
In but, my country, nice guy, of your old bit, DC's bit. In my country, we take him to the edge of the village and throw rocks at him.
Until he feels better.
Until he feels better.
Oh, so I did go on in Jordan. The that show, that night, they flew in somebody else. It was two shows. And everybody was kind of giving the promoter, they were kind of snubbing the promoter because everybody was pissed at him that he would do this. And Russell's brother was kept telling me, I'm kicking myself. You've been killing all this whole tour, and I should have really put my foot down. So at 3 o'clock that afternoon, they're doing the sound check, and that they do this, he flashed my name on the back of the stage, and the promoter goes, no, he's not going on. And Russell's brother goes, yeah, he is going on, and he's going to kill, and there's nothing you can do about it. So, and I went on.
Nice.
I went on, and both shows, and just crushed it. Then Russell would come on stage, and go, how about that for Greg Rogel? He's a Jew. And nobody cared.
Nobody cared.
There's a Palestinians in the audience. So then we did Oman, and he did the same thing, and nobody cared.
It's just in a few people's heads.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just like we were talking last episode with Ted about having to be clean sometimes. Yeah. And that is the same way.
Yeah.
The only reason you have to be clean somewhere, other than on TV, is because there's someone who either is affiliated with the production part of it, or might be there and holds a reasonably high whatever.
Right.
Who has it in their head.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Who got touched as a child.
Well, that's where the pressure was.
Everyone else is like, we know what this is. You come and laugh, and they get to say whatever the fuck they want. That's the whole point.
Right. Well, that's where the pressure is. It's like in a corporate gig, you know, they tell you to work clean. So if you go a little bit blue, there might be some guy in the back who says, you know what? Don't pay him. You know what I mean? But in this gig, there's the pressure sort of like that one guy in the back, like, you know what? Kill him.
Yeah.
He said fart, and now it's over.
But none of that happened.
It's funny to
none
go
of
up.
That. It was all fear, you know?
Yeah.
And it was unfounded.
Well, that's great, dude.
Yeah.
Because those stories, when you're telling them, I'm like, how does this end?
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody
with
was,
us, so obviously I know.
Like all the Jews are telling me not to go.
He was telling me about it before, and he was kind of fired up because, you know, they gotten in his head, or the whole shit had gotten in his
head. My head
like,
cut
I'm
off.
I'm fucking saying it, man. I'm saying it, man. I'm fucking saying it. I was like, dude, you know, you want to, you know, suss it out, feel it out a little bit before you go announce it.
Make a rash decision.
It's like, I'm fucking saying it. I don't care. It was so funny.
There's so many Jews, like Jewish comedians, are like you're gonna get your head cut off. Don't do it. And then I kept like I'd call Russell and be like, you sure I'm not gonna get my head cut off? He's like, you're not gonna get your head cut off. Don't worry.
He's like, I'm 90% sure. And believe you me, if it does happen, they are gonna hear about it from me and my people. Wow,
shit.
Dude, that's balls. Yeah, just going into a place to do shows where English is not the first language.
Yeah,
you got to make some adjustments.
You got to make some adjustments, and so then to have that pressure on top.
Yeah, and we did. You know, we did.
Then people might want to kill you after the show.
Right, but it wasn't.
I think we've all felt that way at one time or another.
It wasn't the case though, and
that's that the crowd wanted to kill us.
And we've done every. We've done every, every country. You know, we did China. Done all of Southeast Asia, Singapore, Thailand, you know, Australia, New Zealand. We did Kenya in Africa.
How was that?
Wow.
Kenya was great. You know, I went on stage in Kenya, and I was going to make fun of it was Kenya Airlines. Uh-huh. So I was going to open making fun of Kenya Airlines. The president was in the audience, and his
president of Kenya.
Yes, and his wife was actually on stage, and they had security guys running behind me while I was doing my act. But what I didn't know was he owned the airline. The president owned the airline. So I went up there, and I immediately trashed the airline, and it got really fucking quiet. And then I realized what I had done, and then I'm like, hey, I really want to apologize for, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then I went on, and this set went really well. When I walked off, again, Russell's brother was waiting in the wings. Don't you ever apologize. You're Rogel. You do what you do.
I'm loving that guy. Russell's brother from
Clayton.
These stories.
Clayton's great. He's great.
Clayton Peters?
Yeah, he's the best. He's the tour manager. And, he looks out. He looks out for everybody.
He was probably one of those guys. It was at Montreal and in Chicago.
Oh, his introduction when he brings him on. He does a wrestling.
They were doing it in the hotel and like in the elevators and shit. It was funny.
Yeah, he's joking around. Yeah.
You get in the elevator with him, they just be like, Russell Peters! the whole elevator ride. I had a couple of friends with me and we were all like fucking around yelling. And my one buddy fucking slammed Andy Dick only to realize that he was fucking standing behind us in the elevator.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
And his kid was there, too. Oh. And they were still super nice, those guys. The dicks. They're actually nice guys.
I met him. Yeah, I met him out in California. Yeah. He was a nice guy. And his son does stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Yeah, he's also a nice kid.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh. Andy Dick. Yeah, I haven't seen him in, God,
Russell
many years.
Russell Peters. I did a show with Russell at one of those. At the Chicago Theater.
Uh-huh.
It was awesome.
Oh, I did Chicago Theater with him also.
Oh, it was great, dude.
Yeah.
It was part of the festival, you know. There was like four or five of us on the show.
Okay. It's a beautiful theater, isn't it?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
There was like 3,600 people.
Yeah, that's a small Russell Peters game.
Yeah, right.
We did Madison
Square
Garden.
Big crowd for me.
Yeah.
I signed the wall of the theater just under Frank Sinatra.
Wow.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Did I say that on a previous episode?
No, I don't think so.
That was really cool. I didn't even realize I was writing.
That's a classic theater.
Frank Sinatra. Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally took my breath away. You know, I was like, oh, sometimes this is great. You know, sometimes you're a substitute teacher once in a while.
Right.
But sometimes it's glorious and awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot of range in where this business can go.
Yeah, and it's and in the same night too.
You're a hero to a clown.
Oh yeah,
Same night you get the, standing ovation, then you get booed later, right? It's the same material.
So brutal.
Know? But you know, my first Tonight Show, I ran the set.
How old were you?
I was 21.
21. Wow.
Maybe 20. But my idiot manager at the time, I ran my set at the Improv before the show, the night before the show. And it bombed. So I walk off and he goes, "You're not ready." I'm like, "Well, don't tell me I'm not ready. I'm going on the show tomorrow."
Yeah.
So then we go down the block to the Laugh Factory and I do the same set and it fucking kills. And he goes, "I don't know what you did to make that work." I'm like, "I fucking drove 3 miles. That's all I did. You're an idiot. And don't give me any more fucking advice."
I don't know what you did differently. You're like, nothing.
Yeah.
It was the crowd.
I listened to you and I learned. Yeah.
I had a manager that you guys both know.
I think we've all had that manager.
Yeah.
I think we've all shared him.
No, not that one.
Different one.
Yeah. The protege and his and his ranch hand brother.
Yes.
Yeah, no, not talking about
protege. Okay.
Yes, I know who you
are. I had a bit. I had this big chunk about rain, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, you get caught in the rain and that, you know, the face that people make, you can squint your eyes, like it's going to keep you dry. And so it's a whole long, huge, long chunk about rain. I go up and I do it on a showcase, and he says to me afterwards, he goes, "I thought you were going to do some bits. All you did was talk about the rain." I've killed. I mean, I just killed.
Oh, I love it.
All you did was talk about the rain. I'm like, yeah. You thought that was off the cuff?
Wow.
It's a polished fucking 8 minutes about rain.
See, he wasn't a good manager. We're not gonna say names.
Yeah.
But what I liked about him is he just wasn't smart enough to rip me off. You know what I mean?
Yes, indeed. I know what you're talking.
Yeah.
But he did play. He did. Yeah. Every once in a while, he'd pull a rabbit out of the hat. That was his thing. You know.
Oh, he did some creepy stuff.
But I mean, like in a. Well,
I mean,
he did
some good stuff.
He did some good
stuff.
Yeah,
and he tried. I think his heart was, his heart was in it. Whereas the other guy was just straight up scumbag. Yeah.
Oh, it's entertaining. Entertaining.
I think it's so different the way they look at us.
Yeah.
These guys that want to be agents or managers, we get into it, we're like, we're going to be comedians. This is what, and more than that, we're like, this is what I am.
Right.
So then we follow that, you know. Those guys, what's their path? How do they end up there? And then how is their perspective of us?
Yeah, we're like, we're a commodity.
We're a commodity. Exactly. Can I sell that?
Well, I remember.
You know, they're looking at us more than anything.
I remember this guy. I was at the Cellar one night, and the director from one of the Adam Sandler's movies, I forgot the guy's name, was in the audience.
Yeah.
Was it Nick Swartzen?
Nice guy, like
it. Nick's great.
Yeah, I love Nick.
Sorry I said it that way.
So after the show, he contacts Esty at the Cellar. And he says, I have an audition that I'd like Greg to go out on. I'm doing a movie. It's an Adam Sandler movie. And I want him to go out on it. So she calls me. She calls me.
No, I'm just kidding.
I think it was the one of their firemen, him and Kevin James.
Little Nicky?
No, it wasn't that one. It was another shitty movie.
Oh, the gay one. It was where they were a gay couple.
Yes, yes, yeah, yeah. Yes. So I call...
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Sorry, did I keep cutting
So off? She calls me. She tells me he wants you to go in this audition. So I call our manager, and I'm like, look, I got an audition for an Adam Sandler movie tomorrow. I just want to let you know. You know, they'll call you up and you can contact them. We'll set up the times or whatever. He's like, yeah, great. So then I show up at the audition, and every single one, I think you were at the audition. Every single client on his list was on the audition. So what he did was I made the mistake of contacting my rep, and my rep gave it to everybody on the roster.
And he sent everybody.
Right. So he's trying to, he would always he's hedging his bet.
Oh, fuck it. It's Jason Steinberg.
Yeah.
His name is Jason Steinberg. And his brother is Evan fucking Mungo from Blazing Saddles. Fuck him. Why are we, who are we saving them from?
And the other guy was Alan Bursky.
No comment. No comment.
Okay, yeah, fuck it. Let's do that, too.
Well, I remember...
I'm in.
Barry...
Dude, that guy stole your act, is what you said, right?
A friend of mine was in Las Vegas, and he was watching the guy on the show, and he started doing this old bit that actually was like the first bit I did on The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
It was this Letter to Santa
Claus. Letter to Santa Claus
from
a Jewish boy.
And he recorded
before
it.
Before he toured the Middle East.
He recorded it and played it for me and sent it to me. So I didn't know how to contact this fucking guy. So I tracked him down, and I got the guy's number, and I called him up. And I'm like, yo, dude, you're doing my bit that I did on The Tonight Show, the Santa Claus led. He's like, no, I never do that. I go, dude, I have the recording of you doing it. You're doing the bit. He goes, oh, I get that out of an old joke book. And I'm like, no, you didn't. It's not in a book. It's from my fucking mouth. This is my bit.
Got it from an old joke book.
He goes, oh, no, I remember now. Yeah, I bought that from, and he names another comic who had committed suicide several years ago.
Jesus.
So I'm like, dude, now you're just throwing a dead guy under the bus. Why don't you just own up and admit you did the bit and stop doing the bit, you know?
Yeah.
And he goes, you don't want me to do the bit anymore? I'm like, no, I don't want you to do the bit. He goes, all right. And then he goes, can I still do the Flintstones vitamin bit? And I'm like, oh. and I didn't remember the bit. So I'm like, what was the bit? And he does the bit. And I'm like, oh, yeah. No, don't do that one either.
Dude, that same guy asked me in the car. Somehow I was in a car with that dude. I don't know why. He gave me a ride home at the end of that that showcase.
Yeah.
But he's repeating back to me my bits. He's saying, oh, I love this bit. I love that.
Like a death knell when somebody loves it.
And then he goes, and this is goes to how, removed from reality he kind of is, that he doesn't realize that this is a tip-off. He says to me in totally earnest, he says, he goes, what would you do if you found out a guy was doing your material?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
He asked me that like a child. About to, so I said I would break his arms, and I would break his legs, and I would put him in a hole in the fucking ground.
And he said, what do you think Greg Rogel would do?
What do you think Greg Rogel would do if we just go down a list? I'm like, same thing. He's like, what do you think?
He's
boy.
A creepy guy.
Creepy guy. Both of those guys.
Yeah.
It's so interesting, man. Yeah. I feel like I have to address it because that's what happens on this show, kind of, when we get guys in that we're all around the scene and we all know so many of the same people. It's like we get to where, all right, are we going to say people's names or not?
Yeah.
Well, it's not shitting on people's show. But occasionally stuff comes up it's interesting to talk about and you air it out a little bit or whatever. But this isn't one of those shows where you just sit and shit on people and that's the whole fucking thing. It's not
right,
like that.
And we don't want it to be that. But some, when we're telling these real stories, things that happened.
Sometimes names
come up and it's, it's the truth. They're tall but true. That's the whole idea.
Yeah.
We've gone from grade school... to shoplifting.
With a nice segue there.
With a nice segue. That's fucking hilarious, dude. You're like, so, warm fuzzies.
Dude, I just had to have him say it.
I know, I get it, dude. It was amazing.
Yeah.
What a great, what a a great story.
Yeah, like, it's very possible I'm the only Jew to ever get up in front of 5,000 Sunni Muslims in Saudi Arabia and talk about my balls.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm not the first Jew to ever do that, there's only maybe one or two more.
Right.
That's huge, dude. And just such the picture, like, we got to go there with you a little bit in the storytelling, and that's what the show's
all about.
And
knowing you, that's the other part of it. Like, yeah. That's the other part of the equation, man. Yeah. It's just I saw the pre-game. I was like, fuck it, I'm saying it. I'm fucking saying it.
Yeah, I got a taste at the cellar that one night. You were like, you went from worried to like, fuck it, I'm all in I'm going to do it.
Well, you know, initially, 2 years before on his previous tour, that's when I just first met him. He invited me to come to Saudi Arabia. They were just doing Qatar, Oman, and Abu Dhabi. And I first.
That's really fun to say.
First, Abu Dhabi. It is
Abu
fun.
Dhabi.
Yeah. Say it three times. Yeah. It's even more fun.
Abu Dhabi, Abu Dhabi, Abu Dhabi.
And I initially said, yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it. And then I started putting together. And then everybody, I was telling people about it, and they're all like, you're going to get killed. You're going to get killed, you know?
Right.
So I started putting together a set that I thought would be totally unoffensive.
Right.
I was running out of material because even stuff that I work that's clean still has a definitive edge to it where I don't know if it's really if they're going to be offended by it. And then on top of the fact that I'm a Jew and I was still worried about the whole Jew thing.
Right.
So I'm like, you know, to convert. So I put together it's a 25 minute set. I put together what I thought I had like 22 or 23 minutes. I'm like, I could stretch this out of all really clean stuff. And most of it's basically me talking about my dog. So then I go online and I look up Omani customs, do's and don't's. And unlike number 7 of don'ts was don't talk about your dog. It actually said don't talk about your dog. They don't really have dogs. Pets. Are you fucking kidding me? So I said an email.
Don't talk about your dog. Like, son of a bitch.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. So then I was like down to 11 minutes.
What can I talk about?
I called Russell and I'm like, you know what, buddy, I appreciate the offer, but I don't think this is a good idea. And I bailed on him. And then they were sending pictures back and they were posting it, all of his crew from the Middle East. And I was kicking myself when I saw how cool it looked, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So then a few months later when he started his next tour, he's like, you're doing the tour. You're going to do the whole tour. And, you know, you're going to do the Middle East. You're going to do it. And I'm like, I got, you know, because it was the end of the tour. It's a 2-year-long tour. So I knew I had all this time to prepare for it. So I'm like, yeah, all right. So, you know, this time I'm going to do it. And,
That's
I'm glad
awesome,
I did.
Dude.
I'm glad I did.
I am too, man.
Yeah.
I think it's been a good thing for you on a lot of levels. And,
yeah.
And Russell's been a great friend.
Russell's been great. Yeah. You know,
Russell
I met him.
Peter!
I only met him like, I met him 5 years ago. He came into the cellar and he knew me.
Yeah,
you know, he goes, Greg Rogel, and I'm like, we met, you know, and he goes, no, I've been a fan of yours for a long time. I'm like, really? Oh, and, you know, and he goes, you want to do a date? So we did,
awesome.
We did Constitution Hall, Constitution Hall in D.C. Have you ever done that room?
It's like a
5,000 seat. Yeah. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Too big
I've
for
seen
me.
Things there. I've seen.
And then after the show, we're all having some food back at the hotel. Eric B is there, you know. Eric,
wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Was Rock him with him?
No, he was not. It was just
Did
Eric
you guys
B.
get paid him?
But nice guy. They go, like,
oh, shit!
And
get
then everybody's
the
like, everybody's leaving, going in their separate ways, and Russell just goes, hey, Greg, you want to go to Europe? And I'm like, all
right.
Like,
right now?
And
can
he's
I go
like,
back to my
he's
room
like,
first?
All right, you're in.
And
then
he whisked you away. And then, he was like, I'm going to take you away from all this, kid. I'll show you the world.
And that was it. 3 months later, I was on the European tour, which
That's
is
awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's
so.
Cool, man. I got to get Russell to come in here and tell a story maybe one time.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, yeah, definitely.
I've known
I mean,
him.
He's busy. He's a busy man.
Busy, yeah.
Since 2000, I was waiting to go on stage in Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
And this dude comes in a white sweatsuit. It was Russell. We were standing waiting to go on together, you know, standing in the hallway bullshitting. It's the first time I met him. I've met him, you know, run into him a bunch of times since.
Yeah, I mean, I've known him,
good
for,
dude.
Known of him for years, but I never actually met him until like 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, I think we got to wrap it up here for this episode of Tall But True. We talked about a lot of good stuff. Do you have something you want to plug?
No.
Russell Peters! Got a plug?
Nope.
My plug is the usual. TheRealBenBailey.com is my website. I'm RealBenBailey on all social media. So check that out. Look up tour dates. Come out and see a show. Thanks for listening to Tall But True. DC Benny.
DC Benny. DCBenny.com. The real DC Benny on Instagram and Twitter. And it was awesome, man, having you on here, Rogel. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Always
great
a
story.
Pleasure to see you guys.
Great story. Yeah, great segue.
We got to do steaks in a couple of weeks.
Steaks.
Gotta get
steaks.
That going.
That's right. Oh, that sounds good. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, we haven't done that in ages.
I know.
It'd be great.
And I'll
we
get Henley
used to
on the
do
horn.
That like
every
once a
months.
Year.
Yeah, we did
twice
it.
A year.
Yeah. Yeah, three times a year was going for a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll do steaks again. And we'll do Tall But True again. Come back and listen. Thanks, everybody. That's it.